Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, good evening, good morning, and good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world. This is the Charlotte Line. John will be joining us in a little bit, but you still have the two great hosts, as usual, one from the Deep South and one in the Middle West. We'll start with Brady Bansicle in Des Moines, Iowa. How are you tonight?
Oh, can't complain, Zach. It's getting kind of toasty up here in the Midwest, but haven't melted quite yet, so we're still hanging in there.
That is something I do not miss, as being from the Midwest myself, is those hot nights and those hot summers. And I am holding it down steady here in Studio G in Greenville, South Carolina. And it's been, the best way to put it, fairly nice today. 70-some degrees, a little bit of rain, but I've been inside, so can't complain. And a little bit of news, in about 2 weeks, two or three weeks, I will be in the Midwest again.
Oh, no kidding. You're on your
right, week. Yeah, it's going to be the last weekend of July. I will be there. We will have to make plans, you, me, and Greg, and potentially more people. But I will be back in the Midwest for a short time. But that's not why we're here. We're not here to plan out the trip. We're not here to talk about the little goodies I'm going to eat. We're here to talk racing. And before we hop in to this interesting race weekend we had at Indy, we're going to talk about a potential new schedule that's been leaked / unconfirmed that NASCAR will be essentially running. Well, they'll be running a lot more races, two doubleheaders and two races at Daytona about 2 weeks apart. Right now, a proposal that is possibly going to happen is there's going to be a Michigan doubleheader. And here's John joining us. Dr. John, how are you?
I am doing well. We had a little bit of technology problem, and I had to restart everything. Thank you for getting us going on time. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Well, we were just talking about how NASCAR has a potential new schedule coming out. It's not stated whether it's going to be a only Cup and Xfinity, but Brady, this is something you'll like. There's going to be a doubleheader at Michigan. One each day, so back-to-back like we had at Pocono. Then we head down south to Daytona to run the road course, which NASCAR already said they were slated to run the road course next year for the Busch Clash, and instead they'll substitute it for Watkins Glen, it sounds like. Then we'll have a doubleheader at Dover, and then back to Daytona for the oval race at the end of August. This is there's a lot to take in right there.
Oh, no, definitely a lot to take in there, especially the possible addition of the famed Daytona road course. For all you sports car fans out there, it would be the same configuration that they used for the 24-hour of Daytona and a lot of other sport car events. And honestly, we're talking about a third trip to Daytona in one season. Sign me the hell up. I love any time we go to that famed track. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what the stock cars will do on that road course layout. It's not quite the same kind of mentality that you have for Charlotte or even the Indianapolis road course, which we got a taste of this last weekend, because with Daytona, it's its own animal. So you have those tall 35-degree, 33-degree banking corners. And so riding up on the track and then also getting a car that handles through the corners, you know, through the twists and the winds, it's going to be a really delicate balance to get those setups just right for the stock cars.
And you hit it perfectly on the head. It's not like the Charlotte Roval. The Charlotte Roval, the best way I like to tell people, it kind of is like a miniature of Daytona. It has a similar configuration. Daytona does not have that little dog leg at the start-finish line like Charlotte does. But it is interesting because the layout, you have turns one and two that are then turns like eight and nine. And then you have a bus stop right before turns three and four, and you still will reach high speeds. The big thing that these guys are going to be dealing with is not just the left, but the hard right. A lot of U-turns and a lot of sharpness to them. So if we do get to see this earlier than expected, the one thing that will be really cool is that everyone will be able to run it, not just the drivers who qualify for the Clash, but also drivers who maybe get someone like James Davison, who has run at Road America in the Xfinity cars. He ran at Pocono, didn't have the best success, but maybe he could come up again and run this race at Daytona. The one thing I love to see, you know, is seeing some ringers. You know, we haven't really had those ringers come in and race like road courses or you know, I guess in the truck series, like the dirt race, we haven't seen any ringers come in. It would be fun to see that, especially at the historical Daytona road course.
And it's also going to be really kind of interesting. I'm going to touch on it a little bit here when we go into our race recap, but I can't reiterate enough how excited I am about the possibility of going just to Daytona in general for another time, because this last weekend felt kind of empty for me. I know me probably the same as a lot of you race fans out there. July, you know, 4th of July always meant one thing to me. It was always fireworks and going to see and watching the Daytona race. And so having no Daytona race this year, the 4th of July race, and instead going to the Indianapolis Raceway, it didn't feel like a holiday like it normally does for me this week. And I definitely felt off. And so just the prospect of going back there is going to be a really, really cool treat. But the other thing that you touched on, the other thing we want to highlight here as we're discussing this potential maybe way of finishing out the regular season, and that's the two doubleheader weekends at Dover and Michigan, of all places. And I got to say, Michigan will be a pretty okay by the numbers race. I think Michigan is definitely a track that's capable of putting on two phenomenal races in one weekend. But Dover, that is going to be one hell of a taxation on those drivers to run two full races in the span of 2 days on one of the toughest tracks on the NASCAR circuit. Like I could not imagine or fathom the preparation that's going to have to go into that, especially two races back-to-back at Dover without any practice. That is going to be a hell of a Herculean task for these Cup Series stars.
And that is something that's very interesting, because some people have said that, well, you know, there's drivers that are exceeding without the practice and this and that. But the big thing is, especially at, because we're going to Daytona, you know, we've already been there this year. We have data, but we don't have data for the road course. That's going to be very interesting and taxing on these drivers. But the big thing with, I feel, Dover itself, and you hit it on the head, is how hard that track is. You know, it's not like a Martinsville paperclip where it's really, you know, it's really quick and really off. No, you are going full on. I mean, at points you can hit almost 160 on fresh rubber there. So the true grit and the true, I guess, power that these drivers are going to have to push through just to get through a doubleheader. Now, it's not specified if this is true or not. I need to you know, make that clear. It is not it's not said that it's true. It's not said that it's real. But there's a lot of, you know, a lot of people that I've talked to that have said it sounds like this will happen. And if so, Dover, I think, is going to be a lot more demanding than maybe Pocono was.
Oh, no, definitely going to Dover twice one weekend, I think, will be one of the biggest stories of this comeback from COVID, because that is definitely a track that'll be pushing these drivers to their absolute limits and really separate the drivers that are clicking off well, unloading off the truck well, and are going to be our championship favorites, especially if we have to continue this no-practice kind of mentality. And the drivers that definitely have a lot of work ahead of them.
And that's something too. There's still no real idea when or if we'll go back to having a practice, even just one practice session. And I know what you're thinking. Well, Zach, they practiced this weekend. Well, that's kind of true. Xfinity Series got to have two practice sessions because it's a track they've never raced at. There's no data. There's no nothing. The only person that has quote unquote run the Indy road course, the Grand Prix course, is Matt DiBenedetto, and that's it. And no one else had. So that was kind of a mandated one. But we're not going to get, you know, we don't have an answer yet if we will get any, at least qualifying for the Coke 600. We did get a qualifying effort in. But for everything else, we haven't had anything or any idea if we will get that. And I think that's going to be the big thing that might help these drivers, though, on the secondary race. If the configuration – or not the configuration, if they get to use the same cars and if the conditions are really similar, you're going to see drivers, maybe Kyle Busch, use that as an opportunity. To like, hey, we're running at the exact same time, we're having the exact same car, and the only thing that's different potentially is the motor. If we keep everything the same, we could really run and possibly get a win, but it could be the first time he gets a win. He still hasn't won this year, which is nuts to me and I think a lot of other people. But, you know, it's a good and bad thing that they're going to be doing these doubleheaders because it will give them data for it, but it's going to be really, really sketchy for possibly going to Daytona if we don't get a road course, if we don't get a practice. Now, I will say this. We've seen Indy, the Indy track get practice for the Xfinity cars. We probably will get practice sessions for that. It does sound like they would give teams that because they need some sort of data to go off of, but it will be interesting to see what happens. And I can't wait because you're right about the Daytona. You know, 4th of July, if you're a NASCAR fan, is fireworks. And the Coke 400 or the Pepsi 400, whichever one you grew up with, or if you're like me and Brady, we grew up with both. Either way, you just miss having that signal, you know, that NASCAR roar of Daytona on the 4th of July weekend.
Exactly. And, you know, hopefully maybe they'll learn from this. I mean, or I might just get used to it. I mean, we had some pretty good racing action this weekend. I think, personally, it was made more special by the fact that completely unplanned, we got to spend the weekend with the IndyCar Series. They had their Indy Grand Prix to start off our afternoon, which was kind of cool to get that racing series on there and kind of share the spotlight, as it were. And then we were treated to one fantastic Xfinity race Saturday afternoon. And honestly, a pretty okay Brickyard 400. It's still not one of the better races we go to, but definitely the prestige helps that event.
That definitely is. And I want to talk about something that's kind of funny. So I was doing some work today, and I was listening to Simon Pagenaud on the Dale Jr. Download, and Jr. even said he would love to see a NASCAR IndyCar doubleheader. And I was like, you know what? This is pure coincidence that I'm listening to this the weekend after we have, you know, not the Cup and the Indy guys, but still, and we have had NASCAR run with IndyCar. The Truck Series has ran at a few tracks with Indy, one of them being Iowa, our home track, and as well as Texas Motor Speedway. The IndyCar and the Truck Series have ran, but never Cup and or Xfinity, never at the same track at the same time. So it was very cool to it was cool to see the different kinds of cars race at Indy within a 4-hour time span, really. I love it because you get to see Indy cars that can go upwards of 230 miles per hour, and you see Xfinity cars that can go upwards of just over 200 miles per hour. It was fantastic to see, and I think we should start there with the Xfinity car, the Xfinity stuff, if you would like, Brady.
Yeah, why not get started there?
Well, so this was wow, it's not even on Racing Reference yet. Holy cow. Well, the good thing is I have a lot of it remembered. This was an interesting one. It was the first time the Xfinity Series had ever ran the Grand Prix course at Indy. And overall, two practice sessions for the Xfinity guys because they did need to get some sort of practice in, because you just can't go into that blind. And overall, we had a consistent, I guess the best way to do it, a lot of consistent times, and a lot of people we thought, yeah, that makes sense. They should be up there. One of them being the Ryan Briscoe, Austin Cindric, and AJ Allmendinger, kind of being up there in the top three for all the practice sessions.
And honestly, those are the drivers we had to keep our eye on for most of the race. And coincidentally, the drivers that ended up duking it out amongst themselves there at the finish. And what a phenomenal display that they all put on. Definitely a lot of experience there. Austin Cindric won two of the road course races last year. AJ Allmendinger won the Roval race. Chase Briscoe won the inaugural Roval race back in 2018. So in the Xfinity Series, it doesn't get much better when you go right and left than those three drivers right there.
And I'm wrong, by the way. It is on Racing Reference, but it's on the Indianapolis GP. So it was the Pendle 150 at the Brickyard, and I gotta say it, I love this race. I've only seen the Xfinity, or not the Xfinity, I've only seen the Indy guys run that track, and to see a full body stock car hit the bumps, hit that little backstretch they have, hit those like weird windy corners. It was fantastic. I fell in love. I was like, oh, I definitely need to drive an Xfinity car on there. And overall, the battle for the race, it seemed it was dominant at one point to be Chase Briscoe, but also Austin Cindric, and then AJ Allmendinger. Again, those were the three we need to watch, and those were the only guys that really, you know, AJ only led two laps, which was surprising to me, but he was up there so much, you thought he's going to get the lead, and he didn't get the lead. He's going to get the lead. And then you had Briscoe and Cindric, people who, you know, guys who have been teammates before from Brad Keselowski Racing in the Truck Series, they weren't giving each other a break at any point. And we, it's so cool to see these kinds of racing, this kind of racing, and to see not just the old guys, AJ Allmendinger, but also the young guys who are coming up to race that. And I don't even know how to put into words how happy I was to see this and how great, you know, how diverse a top 10 we have. We have Chase Briscoe, Justin Haley, Noah Gregson. That was a big surprise for me. AJ Allmendinger, Austin Cindric, Ross Chastain, who's not really a big road course guy. Alex LeBay, again, having a hard run. Michael Annette, Preston Pradas, who made his first ever start in the Xfinity Series, and he got a 10th place finish. Like, what?
Oh, no, we definitely saw a lot of drivers that you typically don't see out there having a good run, and that's what you love about the road course races. They've kind of taken on the same role as Daytona and Talladega, where it's really a great equalizer, where you can really have a lot of drivers and teams that do well. They can take their smaller equipment and to get a lot more out of it. I mean, obviously, the good case to point to would be Jeremy Clements when he stunned the world just a few short years ago and was able to get his first ever win in such low-budget equipment, you know, family-owned equipment. And that's what you love about those races. And I like that we've got another amazing track on the circuit that we can have more of that style of racing to bring to the fans. Because I know it's definitely become a fan favorite with great racing at Snowman and Watkins Glen and Road America over the last few years.
And Mid-Ohio to add to that list. And by the way, we didn't have a lot of cautions. Only, 24% of the race was under yellow. The first caution coming out at lap 18 for debris off the 78 had a tire go down. But then the 74 stalled going into the pit lane on lap 26. Brandon Jones, we need to talk about this, had a major fiery incident on lap 35 to bring out the caution. End of stage two brought out the caution at lap 41, and then a axle from the 44 of Tommy Joe Martin just came out of the car at lap 52, bringing out the caution, and his crew chief actually has been suspended. That was released. I did not get a full estimate. I haven't seen just yet what the whole penalty is, but he has been suspended probably for the next two or three races, but for a track who's never raced that, it's surprising we didn't have more cautions.
That was the big thing that stood out to me, especially when I was looking and comparing it to the Roval at Charlotte. I just felt like the racing at Charlotte was maybe a little bit closer together. I think the Charlotte track's a little bit narrower because I felt like they had a lot more room to navigate the IndyCar road course, a lot more wiggle room to make some mistakes, you know, give each other a little bit extra wider berth in the corners. And I was shocked. I really expected it to be a wreck fest similar to what we saw at the Charlotte Roval, but it just wasn't the case.
Which that doesn't mean it wasn't bad racing. It was fantastic racing the entire time. I mean, one of the first people to get out of it was Jeffrey Earnhardt, who had a chassis malfunction. The rear end was just kicked out. I mean, if you looked at it, the tire was not lined up with. It was sticking out on the right side and left side. It was tucked way in as if it was pushed in. So that, and then you had Brandon Jones, and that was a scary incident. If you didn't see what happened, Brandon, it's still uncertain if it was a oil line or if it was a brake line or what happened, but all of a sudden he just started smoking a little bit. He goes into turn nine and it's just a blaze of fire. A small fireball, and it extinguished out, whether he used a fire suppression system or it just put itself out. But it's scary, a scary little wreck for him Luckily, no damage, didn't hit anything, but that's just scary when you're a driver and all of a sudden, oh crap, there's a fire in front of me.
Oh, yeah, no, I remember the famous DW quote, Darrell Waltrip. He always said, drivers are fearless, but there's one thing that scares any driver to death, it's always fire. And while there's been a lot of great safety enhancements there, definitely anytime they can mitigate those fire chances, definitely a win for safety.
Another thing that we need to kind of talk about is a controversial call. I wouldn't say by NASCAR, and you tell me your opinion on this one, Brady. There was a restart where Riley Herbst and the 18 kind of seemed that in some people's eyes, in mine personally, it's going to be different, that he shoved, I think
Austin
Cindric. Yep, that's the one I'm talking about, where it seemed like he pushed him and he jumped the start. Now, me personally, I've watched the footage over and over again. He did pump him, but Riley also backed off, and then Cindric just kind of took off. To me, I feel it was a right call by NASCAR to black flag him because he did jump the start, in my opinion. But looking at it over and over, looking at different video feeds, and even looking at some people who have who were at the track, some videographers who sent me some footage, and they even said the same thing. He just kind of took off for no reason.
And I didn't really get a good look at it, and I didn't get to see a whole lot of what was going on there. But, I mean, from the video replays I've seen, a little bit of evidence was shown to me. It clearly looked like Austin Cindric was getting pushed, so him getting the black flag on that. To me, it didn't seem fair. I get NASCAR's position on that, but I got to side with a lot of people on the internet that I think that they got that call kind of wrong.
I mean, that's fair, and that's something that he still bounced back. We do need to say that. I mean, I honestly don't think he was going to be up there to get the win. He did come back and finish fifth overall. Actually, he was kind of posed to be second or third, but then AJ Allmendinger and him kind of beat the crap out of their cars with each other. But still, to come back from penalty like that is quite, I mean, let's be honest, an amazing thing to come down under green to serve a penalty and you still finish in the top five. And this was about midway through the race. You don't see that. At the beginning of the race, you could definitely come back from penalty like that. But at start or at the middle part, it's darn near impossible sometimes.
Oh, no, definitely. It was good to see him rebound because it's been kind of that kind of season for Austin Cindric. He'll have great races, lead a bunch of stages, lead a bunch of laps, and then have something go completely awry out of his control in the third stage that takes him out of so many races. So glad to see him bounce back, and also glad he was able to bounce back because how about that duel between himself, Chase Briscoe, and A.J. Allmendinger? It seemed like every single lap, one of them was getting a little bit of an advantage on the other. I thought for a minute there Chase Briscoe had completely taken himself out when he went wide in that one corner. And not only A.J. Allmendinger got by, but also Austin Cindric was able to get by as well. And so I thought, man, he went all the way back to third. He's done. But then out of nowhere, they kept battling up front, A.J. and Austin Cindric. Cindric was right on the back bumper of A.J., almost giving him the bump and run a few times. And finally, they broke their momentum enough, and it was the perfect opportunity for Chase Briscoe to sneak back by, outbreak them, and then just cruise away to his win. And you could tell how much that win meant to him. He's an Indiana driver, born and raised. He races for Tony Stewart, who's also a native Hoosier and loves racing at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So that meant a lot to him. And the celebration, having him climb the fence, really just take a moment there on the front stretch. It was really, really cool to see there.
That is something for sure that it's kind of a Tony Stewart/Stewart Haas tradition now. If you win with Tony Stewart at Indy, you have to climb the fence and kiss the bricks. And the story behind Briscoe in that, it's even cooler than most people are saying, I guess. So Chase, being from Indiana, but not too far from the Brickyard, he'd been to the track several times, and he had a good friend that worked security that told him to go out there and kiss the bricks. just like before a race or after a race or something. And instead he's like, no, I'm going to get there and kiss them my own self sometime. And if that doesn't show how determined he was as a kid and as a driver now, that's just something else. And it's great to see it. Stewart Haas, by the way, has been dominating NASCAR in general. They only have one Xfinity car, which has now, what is it, win 4 or 5 so far this year?
That's 5 wins on the season so far for the Chase Briscoe sheet machine.
And that's just Chase, one driver, not multiple drivers, not like Tony Stewart, Kevin Harvick and them run that car. It's only one driver. And then their cup progression for all their drivers, for Almirola, for Clint Bowyer, for Kevin Harvick himself. Like, Stewart Haas as a whole organization has been kicking ass, and I don't think we're going to see that slow down, especially after this weekend and how hard it has been, or how hard they have been on the whole field. The Xfinity race itself, it only being, you know, Chase Briscoe being the only Stewart Haas driver, because Cole Custer has moved on and the 00 is no longer racing, it's great to see him busting butts and showing that, hey, I'm not just someone that has a last name. His father, Ryan Briscoe, who races in a lot of different series, I didn't get this spot just because of my last name. I've proven myself, and boy, howdy, if 5 wins so far this season hasn't proven that, I don't know what has.
Well, and it was really cool. He made it his goal. He said when the season started that the benchmark was set. Cole Custer last year had a phenomenal season, and Briscoe knew the expectations. He said that if he doesn't win 8 races, then the season's wasted, because that's what he feels like he needs to do to make his case for Cups. And, man, is he doing it. 5 wins already in the first 13 races. Only a couple drivers in the history of the sport have been able to do that, including legendary Sam Ard. And so if you're in the company of Sam Ard with something you're accomplishing in your season, you know that you're doing something well there. And it's still early. He's got plenty of time to rack up wins and really make a case that he is going to be the strongest contender for the 2020 title.
And we can't just keep talking about Briscoe, but overall, I mean, it's the top 5 themselves, Justin Haley, who kind of came out of the middle of nowhere to get that second place finish. I didn't see him as a contender really for this race. He'd been in the top 15, top 10, okay, but then that last battle and that last, you know, the last restart, the last 3 laps, you're just like, holy cow, where did Justin come from? Where did Noah come from? Again, by the way, Noah and Justin were both. I'm sorry, I take that back. Justin Haley did get stage points. Noah only got stage points in the first run, but it's not a crazy amount. But now they finished second and third. Then you have AJ Allmendinger, the old guy who finally got his first win on an oval this year. And then Austin Cindric in Penske's number 22. It's amazing to me to see how, like, the championship 4, I feel, is going to be them. Chase Briscoe, Justin Haley, Noah Gregson, and Austin Cindric. Unfortunately, I don't see Ross making it because of how hard those 4 guys have ran so far this year.
And honestly, I gotta say, I feel like we're enough races into the season that I feel confident that I can say, what is up with Ross Chastain this season? Like, not at all what I was expecting out of that number 10, that 10 team. Just hasn't really shown the speed. You know, I guess I wouldn't say they haven't shown the speed, because colleague racing this year has definitely had a lot of speed. But I don't know. It just, the whole organization seems like doing well. Chastain will lead some laps, but he just can't close. And I want to know what they feel like going on over there, because it's definitely something.
I mean, that is a little odd for Ross, and you know, he had the great run last year and the year prior. Getting Colleague Racing their first ever win ever at Daytona just the year prior, contending for a truck championship at the end of last season. This year he's running full-time in the Xfinity program. I think one big thing for him is he's still we can't say he hasn't been running bad. He has been running great, but he's not been running fantastic. Fantastic is Justin Haley winning at Talladega, AJ Allmendinger winning a race. Now, Ross did win $100,000 in the Dash for Cash. Actually, he won two of them, if I'm not mistaken. Right?
He did. He won out two of them. So he's had some good runs so far this year. So we know that the team is capable of it.
I think the big thing we need to watch is that Ross is going to be so consistent, he'll sneak his way in, kind of like Matt Crafton did last year in the Truck Series.
I mean, Mr. Consistency does tend to reign, and that is definitely a role that Ross Chastain loves to play. I hope they can get it turned around. The other thing I got to remind myself is that unlike his teammate Justin Haley, who had a whole year's worth of getting used to his colleague crew, this is still kind of a new situation for Ross. He ran a few races last year for colleague, but he's still kind of getting to know that team a little bit on a full-time basis. So that's also something else we can't really discount for where he's probably at in his season and trying to get things righted.
I think the best way to describe it is if you look at Matt Kenseth, he kind of is in the same boat. I know we're talking Cup Series right now. Your extended series right now. Matt Kenseth, someone that's come back, hasn't run with this crew before, has kind of talked to them. I think it's the same kind of stuff, but you're right. But one thing to point out real quick, Ross Chastain is third in points. Justin Haley is fifth in points. So the consistency kind of outweighs the wins right now for him.
This is true. And you know what? Ross is a crafty guy. I feel like we can safely call him a veteran just because of his accomplishments. And I know he'll get there eventually, but it's just been really kind of odd. I really expected him to kind of set the world on fire, as it were, because I was super blown away by his progression these last couple seasons.
Oh, for sure. And his progression, it's still there. I mean, he's still getting better and better. You know, consistency is key to anything. If you look at his truck series run last year, he had multiple wins. He was doing great. He was in the final four. This year, he doesn't have that win. He doesn't have a win yet that secured him into the playoffs. But he's 30 points right now. And I want to say this too, that issue at Daytona where he didn't even qualify his own car. He had to, he used Jeff Green's 38 Ryan Sieg racing car. I think that's something that kind of freaked him out just a little bit. Because that's the start of the season. You have something like that happen, you're just like, what else could go wrong? So his mind might be playing with him a little bit, but I feel like he's getting so consistent and he's getting so much better. And he's also running a part-time truck schedule because he wants to get so familiar with tracks that he can run kind of like Kyle Busch, run everything and anything so he can get more practice, get more prep so he can kick people's butt like Kyle Busch.
I mean, there's no better person to want to aspire to be, especially in modern-day cup racing, than Kyle Busch, because the man can literally wheel anything, and it's just fantastic. So if that's what he's trying to go for, I think he's on the right track there for sure.
I think another great underdog we need to talk about is Alex LeBay, who himself, in the past three races, he's done very well for himself. Talladega, he finished up high enough to where he could – run for the Dash for Cash at Pocono, had a little bit of an issue, kind of fell back, didn't get the run for himself there, still finished really decent for himself, but then he backs it up at Indy at the GP course with an 8th place finish. I mean, Alex is someone, he's ran the Pinty Series in Canada, has won that, he's had great runs before, and is even someone who's contended for the Rookie of the Year with a close battle, so it's kind of cool to see an underdog is the best way to put it. I mean, he's kind of like Ross Chastain when he qualified the four car for the first playoff season.
And, you know, and that's what we need is more drivers like Ross Chastain. Ross Chastain has shown these team owners that, hey, you can take a chance on some of these younger unknown drivers. Like, there is so much untapped potential in the garage area. And I think it's given the teams more confidence, I think, to seek out maybe a lesser proven talent and really maybe try and take a chance on someone who, like a Ross Chastain situation. You just don't know what diamonds might be hiding in the rough.
That is very true. And even looking down this list, I mean, there's drivers like Brandon Govind. He has not run an Xfinity car in a very long time, and it was a kind of a last-minute deal with the 26 car. of a Sam Hunt Racing kind of put together for him to run that at Indy, and getting a 12th place finish after not running in the Xfinity or even NASCAR in general. Brandon runs Lamborghinis for, I believe, in the IMSA program. So it's kind of cool to see someone, another road course type ringer like AJ Allmendinger come in and have a fantastic run like that. Then you had Jade Ufford, who was making his first time start for Bobby Dodder, getting a 15th place finish. I mean, there's just there's some people on there. You're just like, wow, it's surprising to see them in the top 15. I know it's like a top 15 is not much for someone making their first starts. That's a fantastic run.
Oh no, you can never underestimate a good run like that. It's a good solid top 15.
So overall, the Xfinity race for me. Oh, I guess we do need to talk about one more thing. So I don't know if you saw, but Jeremy Clements had an issue with a certain driver this past weekend. A little bit of a push, bump, and run on pit road, I guess you'd call it.
I missed that one. Who did he have a kerfuffle with?
He had a kerfuffle with Riley Herbst. Riley had bumped Clemens going down pit road that caused Clemens to actually get a speeding penalty and had to come through and do a pass-through penalty. Now, Clemens did come back through and come up to the 13th place finish, which is really good for him. He was running somewhat in the top 10 in that region anyways all weekend, or all day, I should say. So a great run by him. But there was just Clemens was so furious with Riley that he took his frustrations to Twitter. The first time really I've seen Clemens take a big issue like that to Twitter, and that just says a lot. And Riley Herbst contacted him, called him yesterday, and apologized to him, which is kind of weird to hear that a NASCAR driver is going to call another NASCAR driver and apologize, like, hey, that was my bad.
You know, we've seen that a lot, especially in the social media age of NASCAR, that Twitter can sometimes be a good way to get your feelings across, really let a driver know that, hey, I'm peeved at you. And we've seen a lot of what would have been feud maybe in another time kind of, you know, just simmer down and not boil over and be something super huge and controversial kind of deal.
For sure. I mean, it's a weird way we are living right now. And I know it's an odd way for me to say that, but it kind of is weird for us because growing up, you know, not having social media and all this, if a driver did something like that on one weekend, he would kind of retaliate the next weekend. And then that driver would go back and forth and back and forth, which caused drama, which caused people to hate the other kind of driver fan or have issue with other type of driver fans. So it's kind of cool to see, but then it's like, come on, are you gonna do something? Like, just bump him once. Do it one time. Just hit him once and drive away. but it was a fantastic – I mean, overall, this race, I really want the Cup Series to run that track because – watching the Xfinity guys do it and even hearing some of the like Dale Jr. talk about that track and talk about that race, I was like, I want to see Cup cars run that.
Oh, yeah, no, and I think there's definitely a lot of buzz for it because, while we had a pretty decent Brickyard 400 this year, it's definitely not a fan favorite. The racing action is not what we typically see on a given race track. And honestly, the facility, the oval, is not – conducive to how our Cup cars race. Like, there's just I don't know, like, it really is not our kind of racing was not meant for the oval at IndyCar. The IndyCar and the Indy 500 is one of the most entertaining spectacles in all racing because they can flat foot it, they can really rip around that track, whereas the Cup cars, they got to bog down, lose a lot of momentum because they can't get the same grip because the cars are just so much heavier. And I don't know, the racing is very historic. I love going to the Indy Speedway because the track is beautiful. I love being there in Indy and knowing the history is there, but we got to really start, I guess, analyzing, is it worth going there when the racing product is just not that good?
We'll talk about that, but let's run down the rest of the list real quick of the Pennzoil 150 at the Brickyard. So again, Chase Briscoe getting his fifth win of the season. I feel like he might break in the double digits this year. Justin Haley finishing second. Noah Gregson finishing third. AJ Allmendinger finishing fourth. Austin Cindric finishing fifth. Ross Chastain finishing sixth. Justin Haley finishing seventh. Alex LeVay finishing eighth. Michael Nett ninth. And Preston Pradas finishing 10th. Great run for a first-timer. Brandon Brown, who at the end of the race did not have a tail panel, finishing 11th. Brandon Govid finishing 12th. Jeremy Clements 13th. Jade Burford and Bobby Dotter 07 making his first start, finishing 14th. Kyle Weatherman finishing 15th. Matt Schneider finishing 16th. Ryan Sieg finishing 17th. Jesse Little 18th. Timmy Hill finishing 19th. A great run and running a different number, the 13 this week. Anthony Alfredo finishing 20th. Stephen Lynch finishing 21st in the 61 car for Hattori. Josh Williams finishing 22nd. Josh Balicki finishing 23rd. Mike Wallace making his first start in a very long time for Johnny Davis Motorsports in the number 0, finishing 24th. Harrison Burton finishing 25th. Joe Graff Jr. in the 08, finishing 26th. Chad Fincham in the 66 this weekend, finishing 27th. Cody Vandeleer finishing 28th, B.J. McLeod finishing 29th, Matt Millis finishing 30th, Jeb Burton in the 8th car finishing 31st, just had a bad handling car, some issues caused him to fall way back. Vinny Miller finishing 32nd with a tire issue, Riley Herbst finishing 33rd, Bailey Curley finishing 34th, Tommy Job Martin finishing 35th with an accident coming out, Brett Moffitt having issues finishing 36th, Brandon Jones again having a scary incident. But he was okay, no wreck, no nothing, finishing 37th. And Jeffrey Earnhardt, 38th. Again, a great race. The top five in the point system, well, it's kind of spread out. Chase Briscoe, Noah Gregson, 21 points behind. Ross Chastain, 55 points behind. Austin Cindric, 61 points. Then you got Justin Haley, 105 points in fifth place. So the point spread is quite big, but it's something we love to see.
Well, it's one of those deals that at this point in time, it's either you're going to be competing for the regular season title and trying to get as many points as you can, which is what we see there in the top three, maybe even down to the top five if we're stretching it. But for all those drivers, like you said, Justin Haley, who finds himself over 100 points back at this point, he's not concerned about the regular season title. That hope is gone. He's trying to get as much stage points, playoff points, and everything else he can. So for that team, all they're looking about is just racking up more wins so they can get more extra bonus points to help pad their total as they get on towards playoff time.
That's very true. So with that, we move on to Sunday, the big machine hand sanitizer 400. This race, now this is kind of, I want to say something about this race. This race itself is kind of a landmark race. The first time NASCAR went to Indy was in 92, correct?
94.
94. Whoa, what did I get 92 from? And
probably,
I mean, that was
Heather
packed out. That's right. I think of test sessions. So this is the first. This is not obviously the first time. It's odd though, and I think for me it's odd seeing no one in the grandstand. I think that's a big thing for me. But you're right when you say that it's an odd race track to go to. But it was a fantastic, like, the racing action was there. We had a lot of unfortunate accidents and some very odd ones that we'll get into in a moment, but it just felt it was an odd race it's an odd race to have right now, I guess.
It was an odd race to have even if we weren't having it as the cutoff race for the playoffs like we've done for the last couple of years, it was always an August race. Brickyard always meant to me fair time. It always meant to me going back to school almost. So having it this early in the year, it just, I don't know, it's throwing me off completely, making me turn into an old boomer over here. I mean, it was still
Are you an
racing.
Old boomer now?
Now, there he is. I knew he was there somewhere. I was just trying to see.
I've been hearing. I've been waiting to jump in, and I just...
it was still good racing. The Brickyard, I was almost for a second there thought we weren't going to get it in because in true 2020 fashion, Mother Nature decided to rear her ugly head, throw us in a bit of a lightning delay there. And I was like, man, here we go again. Are we going to get another weekend of rain, maybe a possible Monday race out of this? I don't know what to tell you guys. I'm getting beside myself with Mother Nature.
Dude, I am not happy at all. Mother Nature has been, like, she's just like, she has been saying, oh, you guys always say what rain. We don't want it at a freaking racetrack.
Right?
Mother Nature has been cruel to us this year with racing because, you know, everything else hasn't been enough. Now, Daytona earlier this year, that was kind of its own thing. All right, that's fine, Mother Nature. You want to postpone it till Monday? That's fine. But now the whole pandemic is still going on. We've missed so many races. Mother Nature's like, let me just pour some more rain on you. Come on, woman, just let us have some fun.
Honestly, really terrible that she's at the point where she's just like, I threw a pandemic at you people. What is it going to take to get you all to stay home? But
I already stay home as it is. But this race, it was an interesting one because one thing that happened was they were saying tire issue. Now, we'll get into that a little bit because I have some words to say about that. But to start the race off, we only spent about 26% of the race under caution, had a competition caution at lap 13, then a caution at lap 41 for Ryan Newman getting into the wall. End of stage one was at lap 51. An accident with Eric Jones at lap 75, which that was a hard hit for him. A debris caution at lap 84. Another good accident with the 2 and the 12 on turn 3 on lap 88. The end of stage 2 at lap 101. Then Alex Bowman having an issue at lap 134, or lap 133. And then Denny Hamlin, the race leader, at lap 154 having an issue. And by golly, if you were to say almost a third of the field would have wrecked out of this race, I would have said, nah, probably not, you know. Or if you would have said a third of the field would have been out before the halfway mark, I would have said, nah, probably not. It'd be later on because that's what we've seen before with, like, Casey Kane when he won or the year later or a year later after that. But instead, by lap 99, the halfway mark, we had almost 10 cars out of the running already.
And that's what really surprised me. It was a very carnage kind of filled in Indianapolis race, but not really in the sense that there was a lot of, you know, bumping and banging, a lot of just really aggressive driving per se. It's just a lot of just unfortunate incidents, some tires giving out, unfortunately, on several drivers. And then I always forget until something happens just how narrow the Indianapolis Motor Speedway pit lane is. And we're going to have to talk about that, Zach. But we accidentally had a bit of an accident on pit stop. So I believe it was the first stop of the day where trying to go down there. Not Jimmy Johnson. We have to talk about that as well. But Justin Allgaier driving the 48 for Jimmy Johnson this week kind of got pinched by Brendan Poole a little bit. He got pinched into a crew member. They were trying to avoid spinning cars in front of him. Both JTG Doherty cars were wrapped up in that. Martin Truex Jr. sustained damage. It was like a six-car pileup on pit road. And when one car got jacked up and spun across, it completely just clogged the track there because it's just a very, very narrow pit road, and there was no room for any of those team members to go.
So the pit road at Indianapolis, I mean, it's not very wide, and even the Indy cars themselves, I mean, you can't go two abreast barely down that. The incident was it's kind of hard to tell really what happened. Even with multiple camera angles we've seen, it's hard to tell if a driver checked up to get into their spot or if a driver checked up because they passed their spot. Anyway, a driver checked up that then caused a bunch of drivers to basically hit each other, and then Brendan Poole got pinched in between the 12 of Ryan Blaney, I'm sorry, and a pit crew member, Zach Price, who got squeezed, knocked his helmet off. And then if you watched, it's a little funny because as someone that's been hit by a race car, he just did this instinctive crab walk to be like, nope, 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 nope. When he was getting from the passenger side to the wall, he was just like, nope, nope, got to get out of here. So for me, it was kind of funny to see that, see him, okay, he's moving, he's awake and alert at least, because it's very scary when you see a crewman get hit and they just go down and they stay down. As someone that has seen that on pit road for myself and seen friends happen to that, you know, luckily, like I said, he was awake, alert. He was taken to end care field center. He was then transported to a local hospital. He got to fly back down with the team, and it sounds like he has a broken kneecap or something wrong with his knee. He will not be at Kentucky this weekend, but I will tell you this. I've met Zach a few times, and Zach is just a great guy. He's a funny dude, and I already know he's just sitting down being like, oh, I want to go back, let me go back there. Or he's just like, you mean I get to sit home, watch a race, and crack open a beer? Pff, sign me up.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely got to take the positive, but just hats off to everyone with their heads-up situation. It was definitely a scary moment there. Glad to see that he's doing okay, is on the mend, and is will hopefully be back to racing soon. But like I said, he'll be out of commission for a little while, and what better way to spend your time in quarantine as you're trying to heal up than continuing to support your driver, Ryan Blaney, as he's hopefully going to be in contention for a few more wins before we get to playoff time. So we definitely want to wish him the best and hope he's in for a speedy recovery.
So that crash itself, I mean, that took out quite a few drivers. It took out Ryan Preece, Corey LaJoy, Martin Truex Jr., which is the second year in a row he's got into an accident on pit road that caused him to not be able to finish the race, which is incredibly odd. Then you had Justin Allgaier, who's substituting Jimmy Johnson, who has been diagnosed with COVID-19. That was a surprise that shocked just about everyone. And then you also had Ricky Stenhouse Jr. and Brendan Poole, who they still went back out, but they got black flagged and parked by NASCAR for not making a minimum speed. So just in that one instance, six cars that were involved in that just taken out, which was incredible and crazy to see.
Oh, yeah, and several good drivers. You knew that Martin Truex Jr. was going to be a contender for the race win, because he's been pretty good at this track the last year, dating back to his Furniture Row days. And so just another heartbreaking Indy. Wondering when he might be able to get this crown jewel race knocked off his bucket list, because he's definitely had the speed the last few years to get it done, just not the trophy to show for it.
It's so – I mean, it's one thing to see a driver to see a driver get into a wreck like that. It's like, okay, that sucks. But then you see it happen again. And it's not like he got wrecked on the track. It was pit road yet again where he had the incident that caused him to not be able to even start the race, is the best way to put it. Only getting to finish, 16 laps, not even a tenth of the race. And it's just like, yeah, you're done. And you could even see his crew guys, they popped the hood before they went red flag for Zachary. Because he was getting transported into an ambulance. They were looking over. They were trying to see, can we salvage this? Can we fix this? But him and Justin Allgaier, their radiators got knocked out, and essentially you can't run that race without a radiator. You just can't. And you just could tell by the crew guys, at least for Truex, they wanted to get him at least back out. But crash clock is something we have, 5 minutes. You have 5 minutes from entering pit road to get your car fixed, to at least do minimum speed, and they couldn't even do that.
Oh, yeah, no. And one other thing that I feel like we haven't really talked about either is we had a bit of a teammate kerfuffle there. Ryan Blaney and Brad Keselowski made some contact, and Blaney got the worst end of it. I'm not sure what really the fallout's going to be from that, or if it was just incidental contact and that they'll move on from it. But I don't know, Zach, did you catch that at all? And what were your two cents on the matter?
I think there was a little bit of a teammate of like, hey, give me some room. I'm racing here too. I don't think it's a big deal. At least I hope it's not. As someone that has seen a teammate confuffle on a pit road after a race, I definitely think that it's something of probably – it probably was a little bit too – as they say, rubbing is racing, a little too rough of a rubbing. But, you know, I think they're going to move forward. They'll probably talk about it at the Zoom team meeting they had today and just be like, just let bygones be bygones. But, you know, Blaney is something that, you know, Blaney's run for Brad before in his, in winning on the truck team. So I think it's just a little bit of a teammate who's like, hey, give me some more because I need it more maybe. But I think I hopefully won't see anything coming up at Kentucky from it. But who knows right now.
Honestly, that's kind of where it's at. It's just, we'll wait and see. But, you know, I thought that was a little bit interesting, especially after the controversy that Blaney found him last week when he accidentally gave the bumper to Kyle Busch and took Busch out there over in Pocono. And looking at the replay, it was kind of just looked like a racing incident, just three wide in the corner that doesn't harbor a lot of grip and just flat lost the car. But it'd be interesting to see if there's any bleed over there because Penske is not, you know, it wouldn't be out of the realm for Penske drivers to be feuding. They have been known to do that in the past.
Well, and you speak of the 18 of Kyle Busch and Ryan Blaney. They kind of had Busch kind of told them, like, hey, I remember last week. Gave him a little punt during the race. Didn't cause him to wreck, which hopefully that was Kyle's intention, but who knows right now. But for sure, you know, Blaney is he's coming into his own. He's showing that he doesn't take crap. And as someone that has won races, because that's a big key thing for Brian, is that he has won races in all four major series, really. NASCAR, you have the Cup, Xfinity, Truck, and the ARCA East and West Series, which used to be called the K&N Series. You know, he's got some stuff to him. So it's good to see that Blaney didn't get punted out of the way. But, that was a scary moment between those two drivers.
Also, we got to talk about it. The heartbreak for Denny Hamlin. He was looking like he was in track to be claiming his third NASCAR crown jewel moment. He's never won the Coke 600 and he's never won the Brickyard 400. However, he's got a couple of Southern 500s and Daytona 500s to his name. Was really looking in prime position to finally get that monkey off his back, get his first Brickyard 400, leading with 7 laps to go, tire let go, and he pounded the wall so hard, and his day was done. I mean, you could tell that he was trying very hard to, you know, maintain composure there in a post-race interview, but he was gutted, and you had to feel for him because he really looked like he had that race all but locked up and then just kind of went away as the Goodyear tire wore.
And that is something. And by the way, Hamlin has been someone that has contended for wins at the Brickyard. He obviously hasn't won. As I'm sitting in my living room, I see a Denny Hamlin door from Indy from 2017. If you remember that was the big controversy with Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr., where Martin Truex Jr., a couple of his crew guys got suspended by Joe Gibbs Racing, who he was not at Joe Gibbs Racing, he was at Furniture Row Racing. So it's definitely a heartbreak. He led 19 laps, led his 19th one, was going into turn one, all of a sudden, boom. And one thing I want to say, I watched the replay several times because I had a buddy over, he was watching, he goes like, oh, he ran something. I thought at first, oh, he might have ran something over because you saw something metallic just push up or leap up. And what it actually was a cowl flap on the hood. It's intentionally designed to keep the car down if it spins backwards, get air underneath the hood to keep it down. But instead, what it was the tire blew and knocked it off and flew it up in the air, and that tire blowing caused him to hit the wall. And it's not the first time, actually, this race that happened. Two other big ones was Eric Jones and Alex Bowman. Now, one big thing I want to say about this, because people are blaming Goodyear saying they didn't bring good tires. Now, we've had an incident at Indy quite a few years ago, and you should remember this, Brady, hopefully, where Goodyear brought a tire that only lasts about 12 to 13 laps, maybe 14 laps, and NASCAR was so worried that they threw competition cautions every 12 to 15 laps just so teams could swap out tires. Like, it was nuts because there's so many punctures and so many cords and so many this and that. that NASCAR themselves was like, yeah, it's not safe for the drivers to run. Even Goodyear was like, yeah, we dropped the ball on this. So I want to say I don't think it's a bad tire they brought. To me, I think personally it's a scenario we've seen before, is that maybe for at least Eric Jones and for Denny Hamlin, maybe the car's camber was set so much that it was chewing away at the tire. Because I remember a race at Phoenix a few years back. It was Ryan Newman, Paul Menard, and Austin Dillon were all teammates. Two of the RCR cars blew tires because possible camber issues was going too much. And I believe the only driver that finished that race was Paul Menard. You know, we've had two cars from Joe Gibbs Racing have this issue where the right front tire blows and they go straight into the wall. I'm not convinced that it was a tire issue. I think for at least those two, it was the camber, maybe the way the car was set up. Alex Bowman, I feel that was something he was running a little too much aggressive, and I think he even made some contact with someone, which, you know, you get a little bit of a puncture or a little bit of a rub, it will tear up that tire easily to have a puncture.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely we're going to have to keep an eye on these as maybe something with the Joe Gibbs Racing setup, because the fact that it happened to two of their drivers, and you kind of have to wonder if there's just something to that there, just something maybe that they were trying differently. Darrell Walter would all the time talk about in the Fox broadcast growing up about how, yeah, if you got to be careful, because if you push it too far with that camber and that pressure, you can easily push it over the edge and get into a spot where you've really compromised the tire and compromised the integrity of the car you're trying to run.
Yeah, and that's something too. Like I said, it's not like it's an unknown issue. I mean, Goodyear makes it known. If you have they have set air pressures that you can have the tires set to when you put them on, to be, you know, the minimum that they need to be, because you can, if you have them below that, they'll rub too much on the racing surface and wear out too soon. And the only reason that it's a good thing is because you can get a lot more speed out of them real early on, but you can also get damage to the tire causing it to blow or something like that. Now, going back to this race at Phoenix for RCR, like I said, they had two of their cars go bad because of camber. I mean, they even said in a released a statement later on after that Phoenix race, before they had the Homestead, was just that they had set the cars to a way that they were really, that the Goodyear tire couldn't handle running an excess amount of laps. Now, when I say an excess, I don't mean like two or three. I mean, they ran 40 some laps before they actually blew. That could be the case here, where, because if you look at it, Martin Truex Jr. was out before the race even started, only finishing 16 laps. We don't know what would have happened to him. Kyle Busch kept pitting under every single caution to get fresh rubber to also make adjustments to the car because he needed to get better. That got him a sixth place finish. And we don't know if he had the car set up the exact same way that the other guys did. So with something right now, I'm not going to say it's Goodyear's fault, because I don't think it is. When I think of something that's Goodyear's fault, I think of multiple tire failures for everyone, not for one team. And yeah, two teams, three teams technically, with the Roush Fenway, but again, it wasn't something of, you know, dozens of tires. Four tires, and even some of them on the same team, I wouldn't say they're a bad tire compound or anything. I would say some bad setup by teams.
And but just the heartbreak for Denny Hamlin. He's had a near perfect season, winning already in a race at Darlington, winning his third Daytona 500 in dramatic fashion. He's right now tied with Kevin Harvick for the most wins so far in the season with four. Just one of them racing deals. He'll swallow it up. And you could tell he was gutted in his post-race interview. But, you know, he just kind of like, you know, them's the break. We got a strong crew. We'll be back. And I don't know. I'm not a big Denny Hamlin fan per se. But I really feel like he's the one right now that I'm keeping an eye on to watch for possibly taking this championship. He's definitely impressed me.
The one thing I would be really worried about for him is Phoenix, because he does perform well there, but when the season-ending race is at Phoenix, you don't want to perform well there. You want to perform fantastic. That's something you need to watch out for. But we need to talk about the race winner, Kevin Harvick. The closure, the guy who he's won this race before. But this isn't his first rodeo, leading 68 laps. 68 laps. You know, the most out of any driver, was up there the entire race day. And, I mean, you can't take this away from him. He was on a – he's on a roll and has been on a roll this season. It's nuts to think that he's gotten his fourth race victory and he comes off a win from Pocono race weekend. Like, what is going to – what's the one thing that's going to stop this guy from not winning?
Honestly, that's just Kevin Harvick's been his MO since joining Stewart Haas Racing. Like, he has been incredibly just consistent throughout his entire tenure with that team, and it just continues to get better and better. That dynamic pairing of him and crew chief Rodney Childers, like, they just they get each other, they click. Those Stewart Haas Fords are some of the best equipment possible you're going to get in the garage, and that definitely is helping his case because – you know, you can be you can lead all the laps you want to, but unless you got good cars and be the best driver you want to, but unless you got good cars, you're not going to really do a whole lot. So that certainly helps his case as he's trying to look for his hard to believe only his second NASCAR Cup Series title. I really feel like many expected him to have multiple Cup Series championships by now, with just how good of a driver Harvick has grown to be in the NASCAR's top division.
And that is surprising, but if you think about it too, the only time he's won a championship, he left RCR. He wanted to prove that, you know, when he was at RCR, he didn't really – he performed great in the early years, but towards the end of the career with the fight with Austin Dillon or Ty Dillon, which either a Dillon brother in the truck race at Martinsville and just him getting kind of fed up, he had to prove, hey – I'm not this old dude that has nothing. I'm going to prove to you I got something. He comes out and he wins the championship, the first one of his career and the second for Stewart Haas, and then he's been consistently winning. I mean, it's not like he hasn't been in victory lane or it's been like, oh, he's only won one or two times. It's been consistent. In fact, at this point, I believe he has more wins at Stewart Haas Racing than he has ever won at RCR Racing.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely his statistics have definitely been trending to the positive. He's right now racked up his 55th career win, really just stacking him up high, and he's now tied with Denny Hamlin for the most wins in 2020 on the tour. So, once again, it's going to be coming down, I feel like, Joe Gibbs Toyotas and Stewart Haas Fords for that championship, because they are definitely the favorites, it looks like, as of now.
Well, one thing, too, if you look right behind him, is a man we've been talking about but not really saying many good things. Matt Kenseth comes out with the second-place win, and I honestly thought that Matt, with that last restart, I was like, okay, if Matt's going to win the race, he's going to do it right here and right now. And I felt bad because it's like, oh, come on, Matt, come on, Matt, come on. Oh. But that's a fantastic improvement for that team. From finishing mediocre at best to getting almost a win and finishing second at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
You could tell the frustration was there for that team. They were not performing the way they wanted to. Matt Kenseth himself, he's been frustrated. He's talked about it extensively in interviews that it's just not been the welcome back to racing that he really expected it to, and that it's been a struggle. But little by little, they're chipping away at it, and what a medicine this race has got to be. Getting a second-place finish, he was in contention for most of the race, solidly in the top 10, clicking off the laps like he needs to. Definitely, this is what that team desperately needed to get their ship righted.
And finishing second with leading 12 laps at the Brickyard, Matt's never won at this track before, but you looked at that, you look like maybe he's won here once or twice, just how hard he was pushing it. And especially that last, not the last restart, but the restart before then, where it was him, Denny Hamlin, and Kevin Harvick. He kept on wheeling in Kevin Harvick to the point where I'm like, oh, my God, he's going to pass him. And then when Kevin blocked him, he fell back. But that's just racing you know, you fall back from that. It's just like, holy cow. I honestly thought if this race went for another five laps, I feel like Matt's car had a little more long run than it did short run speed. I think he would have won. I'm just like, oh my God. And then you look at it, Eric Almirola finishing third. I mean, where did he even come from for this race? He wasn't someone that I think anyone expected to finish that high for himself. He's never ran really that well at the Brickyard. And then he had Brad Keselowski, Cole Custer getting his first top five of the season. Kyle Busch finishing sixth. Michael McDowell, my guy, finishing seventh. Tyler Reddick, the second best rookie, finishing eighth. And Bubba Wallace getting like top 10. And Joey Logano finishing 10th. It's just like, there's a widespread of driver talent there in the top 10.
And I don't know what it is about the Brickyard, but the last couple of years, we've really seen it become the track that a lot of drivers and teams can sneak out of there with a really solid run. We saw it last year when Bubba Wallace in the RPM group getting a solid top five, leading some laps. They backed it up again this year with a solid top 10. We've seen other drivers come away with good wins. Kasey Kahne getting his shocking and stirring final victory of his career there. In a season where he really wasn't looking like he was capable of putting on much magic or really contending for many wins. It's just become kind of a special place, almost like a restricted play race where you really never can tell who's going to win. You know, you think about when Ryan Newman won his race in 2013 for Stuart Haas. Not a lot of many people were going to be picking Ryan Newman that afternoon, and he stunned the world. Or when Paul Menard played the pit strategy excellent and was able to hold off none other than Jeff Gordon to claim his first career win in 2011. And the list just kind of goes on from there. Jamie McMurray, you know, surprising the world by toppling the world in 2010 to get the Daytona 500 and Brickyard 400 in the same season. So it's really just kind of become one of those tracks where you never can really tell who's going to come away with a victory.
And that's what I love. And just the diverse group of drivers that has won at this track, and it truly is a diverse group because you can't just look at it and be like, Jeff Gordon's won, Tony Stewart's won, Tony Stewart climbed the fence on it, that's great. No, Jeff Gordon, Dale Earnhardt, Dale Jarrett, Ricky Rudd, Bobby Labonte, Bill Elliott, Kevin Harvick won in 2003, getting his first one, Jimmy Johnson, Tony Stewart. It's just, there's a lot of diversity. You know, the past 5 years, or past 6 years, I'll take it back, Kyle Busch has won two, Kasey Kahne, Brad Keselowski, then Kevin Harvick going back-to-back. Kind of, but still, you look at it, you're just like, holy cow, there's so much, like, just the names that are on that for how long we've been going to the Brickyard is crazy. And it's always been a full field, too, I will say. Except for 95, there was only 41 drivers. But other than that, it's always been 43 or 40, and that's great to see.
And it's just really just as a testament to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, what that track truly means for motorsports. Because, like we said, NASCAR may not have the history there, may not really have a lot of its own memories there. They're still kind of building up their prestige there. But just being at that track, knowing that it's been there for over 100 years now, the names like Unser, Foyt, you know, that just graced that victory lane. And even in our own sport, even though it's limited, we've had a lot of great names etch their way into victory lane. You think of Jeff Gordon being there, the first inaugural winner, being a native Hoosier himself and all his success there. The multiple times that Tony Stewart won, especially that 05 win, that was definitely one of the most special victories in his entire career. And he's talked about that at great length, having his dad there in attendance and what that meant to finally take it home and climb that fence for the first time. Roger Penske, you know, he's meant so much to our sport. Now he's the owner of that track, and you know that he's going to do everything he can in his power to keep racing there at Indianapolis. Whether or not we adapt and go to working with the road course, kind of like the IndyCars have done for a little bit of time, and obviously was a pretty big success with our own Xfinity Series, time will tell on that, but definitely, it's great to be there, and the prestige is there no matter what kind of race we're in for. Either it be the tire destroyer, boring snoozer of a race that we had in 08, or the thrilling come down to a nail biter finish in 2017. It's just, you just never know what you're going to get at the Indianapolis Raceway.
Oh, for sure. And you know, if you look back at, like, race highlights and stuff like that, I mean, it's always been an intense race, and that's something, too. And just like you said, the tire eating. I mean, this track is known to eat tires. I mean, it's called the Brickyard because it used to be made out of bricks. In fact, there's a little creek you could walk down and start digging throughout the water. You can find bricks that were originally used in the original Brickyard, the entire track, 2.5 miles, covered in bricks. Dale Earnhardt Jr. did a segment on it. Lockridge Wood did a segment on it this year. It truly is an incredible thing. And the history, the provenance, just everything. And like you said, Roger Penske buying and owning the track now, I think gives it a little more promise for the future, for hopefully not just NASCAR, but other racing series. Maybe we'll see F1 back again. Maybe we'll see, you know, some new endurance racing stuff there. I would love to see IMSA go back and race there. You know, and I know this isn't I'm not talking NASCAR, but it's someone that's a huge fan of racing, period, that loves seeing, you know, any form of racing, whether I'm at the track or on the couch, seeing it at the iconic and the most historical racetrack really in the world, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I would love to see it evolve into something much bigger than it was. I mean, at one point it had IndyCars, NASCARs, and F1 all in the same year. And the first year they had F1, they were under construction. They were building stuff during the race season as they were getting closer to that. So it's incredible to see what the history that has been made and what history will be made coming up.
Oh, definitely. And you know, it doesn't matter where you're at with the spectrum. History is history, and there's no place that has history better in motorsports than the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Oval. And I know we'll be there for a long time, especially if Roger Penske has anything to say about it. We will be definitely racing in the state of Indiana for a very long time to come.
Oh, man, I love it because of someone – and by the way, the Indianapolis 500 was postponed. It will be racing this year still. It will be, I believe, in August, correct?
Yes, it is now tentatively slated for August due to the coronas.
And not the crappy beer, the virus. That is something that I, no matter what, if it's on a weekday or anything, I will have it be playing. I will have it on. I will be listening or I will be watching it because it will be another historical race we need to watch. But this race overall, I love it. You know, I know it wasn't as hectic as it has been the past few years, dating back to 2017, where there was that massive, and I mean a massive wreck on the front stretch that kind of gave Casey Kane his win because a bunch of great cars were taken out. We didn't see the carnage. You know, yes, the pit road incident kind of took out a lot of cars, took out six cars before we even got the 20 laps in. But we still saw some great strategy with pit calls, taking two tires and four tires. Ty Dillon made a gutsy move to try to take two tires to get to the end of, I believe, the first stage to try to win. And, you know, didn't play out the way he wanted to. Instead, William Byron, the rookie, getting a stage win. But overall, I love this race, this track itself. As someone from the Midwest, I'm so mad I've never been to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Our good buddy Greg Woods has. He's gone for, I know, at least one or two Indy 500s and a couple F1 races there.
Yeah, he used to go when the F1 series used to run the GP track like we ran for the Xfinity series. And our buddy Chris Hansen, he does some media as well. He's gone out there now the last couple of years for some local media, and both of them have said that Indy is definitely a spectacle not to be missed. And it is for sure on my bucket list. Like Zach, I am very sad to say I'm a proud Midwestern who has unfortunately never had the pleasure of seeing a race at Indiana's home for motorsports, and I hope to make that definitely something I can rectify here soon.
The really sad thing is Indy was only about 4 hours away from me, and I've never gone. And I kicked myself to this day because I had a couple opportunities to go, and I said, I don't think I can go. And it kicks me because now instead of being 4 hours away, it's like 12 hours away.
Oh, yeah, no. Well, you'll just have to come up and visit one of these years, and you and I'll have to go see it together.
Road trip. That is true. So, I mean, overall, I enjoyed this race. It obviously didn't have the hecticity that we have seen the past few years, but still, it was a race overall that I think I'll rewatch, and including the Xfinity race. I haven't seen the Indy race. I was actually doing some side projects when it was going on and forgot it was happening, so I'll definitely have to watch that. But overall, I mean, this race weekend, this doubleheader with IndyCar, I love the concept that we could see a cup race and an Infinity race and an Indy race going on at the same track within a few hours of each other. And by the way, one thing we need to say too, they changed the track like really fast overnight, which is something that, you know, there's not a lot of tracks that they actually have to physically move barriers and stuff to get it prepped for the next race. They normally have, you know, a few weeks or a couple months, depending on what it is. This, they had less than 24 hours to get the track moved over to where it can run the oval.
And we've seen that before at the Iowa Speedway, because the IndyCar series and the NASCAR series, they both run different compounds of thickness and toughness on the safer barrier, and they have different giveaways because the cars weigh differently, they crumple differently, and they have different crunch zones. And so for safety at the Iowa Speedway, they have to make sure they have to run specific inserts for that safer barrier depending on what series is on the track. So definitely a lot of maintenance there. There's also some temporary barriers that they have to put up for the GT track, the road course that kind of marks all the different corners. So that also had to be installed. So just a hats off to that crew for the job that they did to get that all changed over in such a timely manner.
I love it. So overall, great race, great racing action from all the series. And now we look forward to Kentucky, home of racehorses and fried chicken.
And apparently a doubleheader weekend.
Doubleheader? Is Indy going there as well?
No, the Xfinity Series is going to be run on Thursday and on Friday night.
That's right. I forgot. They are going to be doing a doubleheader, and it's unclear to some teams. It's still unclear if they're going to have to do like what they did at Pocono for the Cup guys. If they're going to have to run the exact same car, I would assume they would. I haven't heard nothing about this yet. On if they have to use the same car or not. But given the circumstance, they probably will have to run the same car, but they will be allowed to maybe change out the engine and the transmission for it.
Yeah, no, definitely something that we're going to be one to keep an eye on here. But it's going to be tricky, and I'm honestly kind of thrilled because the last couple of years, Kentucky has been one of the more entertaining mile and a half, at least for the Cup Series, and I don't foresee any reason why this year can't be more of the same. We saw intense racing action last year between the Busch brothers, and if they just get that track a little more worked in, a little more weathered in, I feel like we're just going to keep on seeing fantastic finishes as we continue on in our racing legacy there at Kentucky.
That's something too. Kentucky itself is a track. It's somewhat new to the schedule. It had been on the Xfinity and the Truck Series run for a long time. They got it, I think, just over 10 years ago, they finally got NASCAR to come bring the Cup Series guys there. And ever since, we've had fantastic races, great runs to the end, and some great calls for a last-minute pit stop.
And, you know, I know it's not a lot of people's probably favorite memory of racing out there in Kentucky, because many people probably look at it as being kind of a snoozer, but for me, one of my favorite memories of racing in Kentucky was as being a Truex fan, especially a fan of Furniture Row Racing, that year that the matte black monster of the Furniture Row car straight up dominated the race there, like leading almost at some point by 16 seconds. Just no one had anything for that car, and I loved that team. I spent a little bit of time in Colorado and got to hang out at the race shop, meet some of the drivers, the crew members there. So it was just really cool to see that night because I loved that car, and the fact that it was just so dominant and no one had anything for it was just a really special evening.
that's something that I love is that Truex took, you know, the Furniture Row had one win. Truex came in, got one, kept getting them, and got them to the championship caliber, and they were a championship team to the point where, you know, it just showed that Truex isn't – it wasn't a fluke that he had won before in DEI and Michael Waltrip Racing. But I do love the fact that I saw recently – and if you're a fan of NASCAR and you know about the – not the conventions, what are they called? The celebrations at the at Las Vegas and at Nashville, where they do the banquet ceremony. That's what I'm trying to think of. What popped up recently for sale was Martin Truex's burnout car from, I believe, Vegas. The last day held it there. Has a V8, rolling chassis, everything with it. If you want it, it's $30,000.
Just only a cool $30,000. Hey, Dr. John, you got a loan for $30,000, right? Oh, Colin's snoozing.
I guess he fell asleep. But overall, you know, I can't wait for this. And it's going to be – it's not just Xfinity and Cup. It's also going to be the Truck Series running there. I believe they are running Friday night. I'm trying to double-check it here. They are running in 4 days from now, which would be – they're actually running on Saturday. That's,
so, yeah, I think the Xfinity Series is Thursday and Friday.
Yeah, that seems – it's – for someone that's always watched and seen the truck race first and then the Xfinity and then the Cup, it's kind of weird to see them do a double. It's Xfinity, truck, and then Cup Series.
No, it's definitely odd, but, I mean, I'm here for it if it makes the racing go better. I'm just excited to see more racing. So I got to say, I run that Instagram page where I do race recaps, and I'm getting a little burnt out, I got to tell you, guys. Running four races in a weekend, that's a lot of recapping with Legos. And it definitely got me a little bit burnt out. But a motorsports fan of me can't get enough. I mean, if I could go back in time and tell little Brady that growing up there would be a time in my life that would suck because I can't go outside, but the one trade-off is I get four NASCAR races in one weekend, I would say I was lying, but the future sounds cool. I would have no idea what I was talking about, but it would be a nice little happy thought there for a little while.
And you get to play with Legos a lot.
I mean, honestly, I'm living the dream. I mean, what more could a kid want?
That is for sure. So it will be interesting to see both. It's going to feel weird watching the Xfinity guys run back-to-back races, because we're kind of used to seeing the Cup guys do it, but it feels so weird to say that. So right now the tentative schedule does have Kentucky and then Texas, Kansas. It says Iowa. That we know that won't happen, though. So as of right now, we know Kentucky and Texas are for sure. No, I take that back. Only the two Kentucky races are for sure right now. We're not even sure if we're going to get into Texas because they have not said if they're going to allow racing in. And that also puts a strain on F1 because they might have to run the F1 race at the the U.S. F1 race at the Indy GP circuit.
Well, that's if they run any F1 racing here at all, because a lot of places in Europe, since we're handling COVID so wonderfully over here, a lot of places in Europe are instituting travel bans on having people come to America or people coming from America just because of the recent influx of cases we've been having around the country. So they may not even come here at all. So that's going to be definitely something to keep an eye on, because it seems like for a bulk of the races they've announced for Formula One, they're going to stay primarily in Europe and not even come over for the Canada Grand Prix or the Brazilian Grand Prix in the other parts of America. It looks like they're just going to be skipping the entire two continents of the Americas entirely this year.
Well, that definitely will be odd to see, but we only got about a minute. To me, I can't wait for the Xfinity race, for the races this weekend. Brady, what you got?
Honestly, I'm looking forward to more racing. I'm going to go up and see a buddy for a little bit that I haven't seen in a while, so I'll have to watch a lot of that racing action.
as recaps or as recordings, but going to be looking forward to another great weekend here in Iowa.
And I will be up there in about 3 weeks. John, you're back. Any final words for the people?
I don't have $30,000 for a loan this week, but it was a great show, and look forward to next week.
Bye-bye.
As am I. And I will for sure be ready for a great show, and a show I'll have to do in my home state of Illinois in about 3 weeks.
Cool. Woo.
Bye.
Au revoir.
Where is she?
British lady, come on.
Did she?
Is she from Manchester?
I have no clue. Bye.